you go to a museum of modern art, you might be asked to look at artworks like an empty room where the lights just go on and off, or a 24-hour-long film montage of clocks, or a painting that seems to be nothing more than splotches of color. Now, when we encounter works like these, we're conflicted. On the one hand, we sometimes think that there's nothing deep or important in artworks like these, and sometimes we even wonder whether modern art is all a fraud. On the other hand, we know that sophisticated critics think that there's something deep and important about modern art, and we wonder whether we're the problem, that we're just not sophisticated enough to know what's going on. So which is it? Is there something deep in modern art, even the strangest and most baffling artworks? Instead, is modern art some kind of scam? Or a third option, is it a little of both? I'm Alex Racy, and here with me for the third season of our podcast is John Farrell. Hi, John.
Sir, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
We've had a little time off.
We have.
I was going to mention to you that, as always, I was listening to podcasts, and I heard somebody give a piece of advice for podcasts, which is about how you title them. So the idea is that in every podcast, there's going to be some moment where somebody uses some unusual, strange phrase. Like, I don't know, maybe today for some reason you say laser chicken or something like that.
I was going to.
Right. I've anticipated.
Have I told you about my new artwork, Laser Chicken number 29?
Exactly. So something like that happens. And then you take that phrase, laser chicken, and that becomes the title of the episode. So this would be episode, whatever it is, 21, Laser Chicken.
Yes.
And this is supposed to be exciting for the audience because they see the title before they've heard it. And they think, oh, laser chicken. And then they're on the lookout for this. They want to know, well, who says laser chicken and why do they say it? And as simple as that sounds, it's supposed to be exciting for the audience. It's like, you know, like a treasure hunt or something like that.
Well, you may remember that when we started our podcast, I had many very strange titles in mind for it, all of which you vetoed. Why couldn't we call the whole podcast Laser Star Nose Mole?
That was actually one of your title suggestions, wasn't it? Just the star-nosed mole was one of them. Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful sounding thing, and then it's remarkably ugly.
Yeah.
And so we can cope with the fact that, you know, we're trying to be inviting, but the actual product may be repulsive.
That's a terrible sales pitch. That's a terrible sales pitch.
It's marvelous. No, I think anyone would be drawn in by that possibility.
It's pretty good, but that now it's deliberate. The fun is supposed to be that it just slides out.
Okay.
So we're going to see if it happens.
But that's not perceptible to the audience that hasn't heard the podcast.
You mean that it was not an accident?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. We could be rehearsing this whole thing, but that doesn't sound like... That's not our way of doing things, right?
It sure isn't.
Well, so maybe that's a good way into our subject today. So since this is a new season, let me start by telling the audience... Well, what's going on? So we've actually got a plan for the whole season, which we haven't in past seasons. You and I are two people who share a certain puzzlement about at least some modern art, especially visual art. And I'm guessing the audience has felt this too. You know, you go into a museum and you see some work of modern visual art and you wonder what you're looking at and why it's supposed to be valuable. So the plan for this season is to tackle this problem. And in particular, we're going to read through a book by Ocean Ward called Ways of Looking. He's an art critic, and he's also the head of content at the Lisson Gallery, I don't know how it's pronounced, in London, and they've got branches in New York and other places. And in this book, Ways of Looking, he's trying to explain the importance of art that's been produced in what he calls the contemporary period, which means the year 2000 to 2018. So this is just... less than two decades of art that he's going to be talking about. So I think one of the great things about this book is that he's one of the few people who writes a book about art criticism that's not in art jargon. It's in plain English, and that's part of what attracted me to it. And as I said, we're going to talk about his ideas about the significance of modern art, and hopefully by the end of this, who knows what will be, eight podcasts discussion, all of us, including the audience, will have thought about whether we're won over by Ward's ideas and whether we see more significance in modern art. So that's the plan. I think I should note one concern that maybe some members of the audience might already have thought of, which is that it's a little bit strange to be doing an audio podcast about visual art, because of course the thing we absolutely cannot do is to show the audience the artworks we're going to talk about. Now, I actually think that despite that concern, this is going to work pretty well. Because when art critics talk about the significance of modern art, it's actually pretty uncommon that they talk about, it's purely visual elements. They don't talk a lot about brushstroke technique or even about just the beauty of what's being seen. Often the explanation is conceptual. And in order to get that conceptual explanation, you don't actually need to be looking at the work of art. I mean, a great example is this podcast that you and I did about Marcel Duchamp, who submitted a urinal to an art competition, which eventually became one of the most celebrated works of modern art. And you don't need to see the urinal. There's nothing special about it. He just bought it from a plumbing shop. And what's supposed to be great about it, if there is anything great about it, is something conceptual. It's not anything having to do with the look of the particular thing. So for that reason, maybe a podcast about modern art is going to work just fine. You and I are going to describe to the audience what they're seeing or what they would be seeing if they read Ward's book. And then we'll talk about what he says the significance is. There's also a sort of backup reason why a podcast about visual art might work just fine. And it's because any artworks we mentioned, the audience can Google instantly. We'll put links on the podcast page. And of course, they could just buy Ward's book, which is about $20, if they wanted to really follow along. So does that sound like the plan for the season?
Yes, that sounds very much like the plan.
But you have this one concern maybe we should talk about seeing the works of art.
Well, when you were going to claim that one can grasp the concepts behind these works simply by hearing them described verbally. But there are feelings that are meant to be evoked by these works. And I mean, there is something going to be lost in discussing them without our having experienced them, and of course without the audience having experienced them. Ward at least has mostly experienced these works
because he's gone to see them.
Yes, there are some that he's only approached through photographs and verbal descriptions.
Right.
But for the most part, he has seen them. So I mean, there is something. You know, I agree with you. We can have a useful discussion about these things, but you know, there is something lost somewhere. They're not merely conceptual. They do offer an experience.
Yeah, the art is not dispensable.
Not quite.
So maybe, especially with the artworks that are supposed to provoke emotion, I mean, we would recommend to people that they do actually take, you know, it'll take 10 seconds to Google them, have a look at them, and see what they make of them, right? Okay, so should we get started with the first chapter of Ward's books?
Leon McDuff.
Okay. In the opening chapter, he describes the question that's going to occupy him and us for the whole discussion. He recognizes that a lot of people find modern art bewildering, and so we want to know why some of these artworks should be considered good or important. And also, how do we separate the good from the bad? How do we figure out which ones are supposed to be good or significant? So in this first chapter, he gives a method for looking at modern art, and he calls it the tabula method, and that's an acronym, and tabula stands for time, association, background, understand, look again, and assessment. And maybe later on we'll get into the details of the method or even try to use it, but for our purposes today, it's probably enough to know the essence of what Ward is after. He says that he wants us to, and this is a quote, start from zero and wipe the slate clean, no matter how many bad encounters with modern art you've had before. Think of your mind's eye as a white canvas and slowly let the work fill in that space. So that's the quote. And part of the way you do this, and now here I'm sort of abbreviating the tabula method, but you do it by, first of all, taking a few more seconds than usual to look at the artwork. You don't dismiss it the way you might instantly if you had a bad reaction to it.
You don't just say, what is this crap? Who cares?
And move on. Yeah, absolutely. So you then try to recognize or take note of your own personal reaction to the artwork. You think a little bit about the background, what he calls the background of the artwork, which has to do with the background of the artist, but also maybe where the artwork is from, or if it's a photograph, what it's a photograph of, and so on. You then do a little bit of reassessment, try to figure out whether or not you understand better the artwork itself, and eventually you come up with an assessment of it. So does that seem like a good short version of the method?
Yes, he's asking you to sense your immediate responses and try to be open to what it is the artist is hoping to present you with.
Right. And I think today we want to mainly talk about whether or not this method is, in our view, a useful one. And I think we both have some some praise we'd give it and some hesitations. I mean, I thought a good way in, though, is to start by talking about intention, which listeners to this podcast will know is a subject you're an expert about because you wrote a book about intention and literary interpretation, and we even did a podcast about that. Now, when it came to literature, your view, and mine for what it's worth, is that you can't properly understand and interpret an artwork, a literary work, without thinking about the writer's intention. And I was wondering whether or not you think things are different with, or might be different with, visual art. Like, suppose we've got this painting I've made that's called Laser Chicken. And it's supposed to make, and I think it's supposed to make you sad because it's a chicken being hit by a laser or something like that. God, that's grim. But anyway, that would make you sad.
Yes.
But,
it might.
But now let's suppose somebody stands in front of my painting Laser Chicken and they don't think for a second about what my intentions were. But the painting still makes them sad because it's a chicken, after all, being hit by a laser, right? And that's awful. So, and I think Ward is sometimes thinking that that's why we can ignore the intention of the author, because the painting either makes you sad or it doesn't. And who cares what the author intended? I mean, imagine I was a terrible, sadistic artist and I thought, this is the funniest painting I've ever made, Laser Chicken. And I think Ward would say it doesn't matter because what you produced was a painting that makes people sad. So can we ignore intention in that way, in a way that we can't with literary works?
In much more than not, there's almost nothing but the intention, right? In some of it anyway. For instance, in the case of Fountain by Duchamp, you simply couldn't understand it if you didn't realize that it was a kind of joke in which the author was, or the artist, was taking an object that is not a representation and is not an object of normal aesthetic value and framing it as if it were. Right? And submitting it as a work of art. It's a kind of joke. There's nothing else but it there but a communicative intention.
See, this is where, I mean, I may agree with you, but I wonder whether Ward does. Because he doesn't seem to think that it is essential to think about whether or not, in this case, Duchamp was making a joke. I mean, he seems, in his tabula method, to say, well, you know, go there, look at the urinal a little bit, think about your own personal reaction to it. You can think about the background, but he doesn't seem to say that that has to be the author's intention. So I wonder whether you actually, in essence, disagree with his method or want an addition to it.
I do. He says you should associate based on the work, but that seems to mean that any associations that come to mind might be fine, right? And not necessarily ones that are expected to be invoked by the work on the part of the person that made it. Now, I think there are modern artists who have gone that way, right, and said, okay, I'm going to offer a thing that you can look at, and I think that it will provoke associations for you, but I have no idea what they might be. That's up to you.
But even there, the intention of the artist was to give you an object which will provoke different associations in different people. And from your point of view, to understand the work of art requires understanding that that was the author's intention.
John Cage has a musical piece. I'm forgetting the name right now, but the name of it is something like, you know, 3.5 minutes.
Oh, this is 4 minutes, 33 seconds.
4 minutes, thank you. And I believe the artist simply sits at a piano, is that correct?
Yeah, you come out to the piano, you raise up, the lid on the piano.
Yes.
You sit down as though you're going to perform, and then you sit in silence for 4 minutes and 33 seconds.
And right.
You close up the piano and walk away.
And so any sounds that may happen to occur during that period, and any feelings you may happen to have evoked by the silence, they are the content of the work, then, as you think of it. So there's an open-endedness, but you still have to be guided by the author and pay attention to it in a way that is structured by his intention. So I think Ward is wrong about that.
Well, so this sounds like a first way in which we agree that we want to, let's say, enhance his tabula method, is that we're probably going to end up paying a little more attention to the intention of the artist than he says we should. Could I add a few more little things that I think maybe need correction in his method? So one is that I'm not sure that some of the parts of that method are going to be so useful, not because they're not important, but because we all already do them, right? So the A, the first A in tabula, stands for association. And it's the idea that you're supposed to stand in front of an artwork and just see what it does for you. What emotions does it provoke in you? What thoughts does it provoke in you? And I feel like, well, that's what everyone does. You don't need a method to tell you to do that, right? So you stand in front of some, you know, bizarre fractured photograph, which is, you know, deliberately blurred and, you know, has acrylic paint splashed all over it. And you're there wondering what the heck is going on. And you do naturally think, well, is this shocking or make me sad or whatever? So it's not exactly a criticism of Ward's method, but I'm not sure how far we get just by telling people to pay attention to their own reactions. I mean, in fact, I think sometimes, and Ward himself says this, sometimes the problem is people are paying too much attention to their own reactions, because very often their first reaction to modern art is, this is junk. And that's why they walk away from it. So we have to be careful with this. I mean, it's fine to ask people what their emotional reaction or conceptual reaction is to a work of art. But I think part of what you want to do when you view modern art is to tone down your own reactions and take seriously the idea that there might be something here that you're not noticing at first glance.
I think he's reacting to the fact that modern art does come with an aura of strangeness that might prevent people from associating or simply communing with themselves about what they're experiencing. And also, as you mentioned, the very heavy layer of barrage of jargon that comes at anyone who's engaged in the whole industry, which probably keeps them from having a relatively innocent and direct relationship to what they're seeing.
Well, and the thing, it doesn't actually get a letter in the Tabula acronym, but a thing he says later in the chapter is that you shouldn't defer too much to the experts. He seems to be worried about that. I'm not sure I share his view on that, but that's his point of view. And maybe part of this association is, don't stand there asking yourself, what am I supposed to feel about this art? What am I supposed to think? As though somebody else is going to tell you. Just ask yourself, what do I think or feel when I see it? Well, maybe I should mention one other thing, one other concern I have about this method, which is that it's, in a certain way, it doesn't seem to be aimed at answering the question that at least I have about modern art. So I guess I should explain what that question is, right? So as you have pointed out, art is housed in galleries, it's curated, there's a whole industry that surrounds it. In fact, there's almost nothing that's viewed or exhibited as reverentially as art, other than maybe religious objects, right? So walking into a museum is a little bit like walking into a religious sanctuary. And there's definitely the implicit message that what you're seeing is not just fun or kind of cool or kind of interesting, you know, the way a random show on Netflix might be. The idea is that it's supposed to be of deep, special importance. It's art, for goodness sake.
Yes.
And I'm worried that the Tabula method and Ward's method is not going to explain to me what's supposed to be deeply important about art. You know, so it may be helpful. It may get me to look twice or three times at modern art in a new way and see things I didn't see before. But I'm worried that once we work our way through the steps, we still have not been told why art is deeply significant. Why I should pay, let's put it in monetary terms, why should I pay a $30 entrance fee at a museum and stand there on those uncomfortable floors staring at these artworks for hours in silence? What is supposed to merit that kind of attention? And I'm not sure that Ward is going to explain that. I don't know. Did you think his method would eventually lead to an answer to that kind of question?
I think that's the kind of question that has to be answered historically. I think we know why we have that expectation about art, but I'm not sure that much of this art can satisfy it. And I don't get the sense that art, that Ward really does feel that he has to justify it in those terms. He certainly does think that, you know, art demands consumers' investment and has to justify it. But he certainly doesn't express that in terms that remind you of the sacred mission of art as it was practiced in the past, or that art is deep. It's almost that he has something that you could characterize it as an anthropological level of curiosity about why people do this stuff. Not entirely reverential in his attitude.
Yeah, I guess I was assuming he would not want to cave into the view that art has no special importance, right? So, you know, just looking ahead a little bit, you and I know that he has a chapter about art as fun.
Yes.
Okay, so some art, according to him, some contemporary art, as he calls it, is supposed to just be fun.
And that's surprising to him, in a sense.
Right, right. But I have a feeling if I said to him, you know, look, these things you have in your Lassonde gallery, some of them are fun. And then I said, but you know what? They're no more fun than jumping on a trampoline, and they are no more important than jumping on a trampoline. I have a feeling that even he would bristle at that. I think he thinks there is some special value to art. That's why he's dedicated his life to it.
Yes.
And again, I'm just worried that we're not going to get that explanation. I suppose we won't know until the end of the podcast series whether we get it, but that's a worry I have about the method.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we'll have to think about as we go forward. You could certainly take the view that art was once a servant of religion, right? And it's one of its major functions was to produce images that assist in devotion and have a numinous presence, like the presence of divine things, and that gradually waned and was transformed into bourgeois art, which gave a similar kind of framework of importance to individual people and their appearances, which is in a way part of the great reverence for ordinary life that has been one of the main themes of the modern world, right? That where that deep respect was a religious thing, it became transferred to the details of everyday life, romanticism and so on. And of course, art was also the servant of aristocratic virtues and aristocratic patronage and power. And now it's lost so many of those functions because photography has taken away the representational power of painting. It no longer has that monopoly on representation that it had. And so that institution kind of goes on as a phantom limb in which people are still trying to find ways of framing objects that they can be reverential towards as they did towards art in the past without having those religious or real world meanings attached. I mean, that's one way of thinking about it, that we're kind of observing the behavior of a phantom limb, which goes on emitting nerve-ending sensations when the object to which they were once attached has vanished.